This podcast is part of the MyPodcast.com network. Go online right now and get your very own 100% free podcast, MyPodcast.com.
Did you have fun in Amarillo?
I sure did. If you've got your Bibles, go to Genesis. That's the easy one to find. Go to the first one. I had a Bible study with a fellow one time, and I said, go to Genesis chapter 1. He looked at me and says, where's Genesis, and what do you mean, chapter 1? That's how much he knew about the Bible. I loved teaching him because it was so much fun. Everything he read, he learned. I mean, he was like learning it for the first time. Genesis. Let's go back to 20. I hate doing it this way. It's driving me crazy. Genesis 25. This new approach I'm taking is driving me crazy.
You're expanding your
horizon. I know. I'm doing it on purpose. I'm doing it on purpose. It gives me... This is a facial phobia, church. Oh, that's what we ought to do. Except we're doing Joseph next week, and I can't do Joseph before I do Jacob. I'd have a spiritual hernia. A spiritual hernia. All right, you got your Bibles. Genesis 25. We heard anything? Oh, okay. That's a good group. Hi, Lacey. How were the tacos?
Bueno.
Attaboy. Attaboy. I like that Spanish. We have a multicultural church here. All right. You got Genesis 25 open. Let's start with this question, though. I think we lose sight of it because we've lived long years past it and have put ourselves through a lot of heartache. And brain contusions from running into brick walls. But God intended, when he made the first man, God intended to live with him. I mean, he put a garden there for him and put a man, put a woman, and he dwelt with them. You know, he went walking in the garden with them kind of thing. So what's God's original intention for us? What's God's original intentions for us? Be with him. Keep going.
No.
Say it the other ways.
To know him.
Know him how?
Intimately.
Taking a walk, hanging out together kind of deal, right? So what changed that? Why did we start hiding? Why did we start feeling ashamed? Why did we start feeling afraid? Why did we start resenting not only each other but him? I'm sorry?
We disobeyed him.
Somebody else said sin. And those are right. Those are the right answers. You nailed it. But I want us to go a little bit deeper. But now put it in our world. What is it that keeps us from being completely what he wants us to be? What are the barriers? What are the things that make our lives look like this drawing? Not that it's not a good drawing, Mama.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I think one thing is the same shame and guilt.
Okay. It really is the same kind of stuff. We face shame. We face fear. We face anger. All of those things are a result of sin and disobedience in our lives. I still want you to explore just a little bit. What are the things that cause you shame? What are the things that cause you fear? What kind of things?
Lies.
All right. Lies. What else?
Our own desires
that take the place of His desires. Capital letters on that one. All right, what else?
Pride.
Could be pride. Keep going. It's Wednesday night. I'm not going to press you much. Good enough. All of these you mentioned are the same thing. How should you spell sin? Does that make sense? Little S, huge I, little N. What's at the center of all sin? What is at the center of every lie, every desire that overtakes God's desires, or every pride?
Selfishness.
It's selfishness. It's self-centered. Call it whatever you want to. That's what causes us to put ourselves in situations that then make us think God wouldn't want to have anything to do with us. Because we decide, hey, I'm going to do it my way. Once we do it our way, what do we figure out? How'd that work for me? Didn't work well, so I turn back to God, but I'm afraid to go back to God because I'm ashamed of me. I'm ashamed of my I in me, so I stay away from God, right? And I stay away from other people as well. What happens if you lived your life like that, but then you were called on by God to do something special? What would your reaction be? There must be a mistake. You can't be talking about me. So everybody say it together. We've said it every week for the last 3 weeks. God looks at us and says, I've got something special for you to do. And we go, who, me? And the answer always is,
no,
me. That's right. Genesis 25. You meet a fella. Now we're going to start verse 27. Okay? 27 following. You meet a fella. First fella you meet there is Esau. What does the Bible say about Esau? He was a skillful hunter, a man of the open country. Now describe him. Put him in your words. He is... Well, now we're not talking about his... And you're right. The Bible is going to say that when he was born, he was so hairy when he was born, they named him Hairy. And then it was red hair, so they called him Red Hairy. I mean, that was his name. Every time they called him, Harry, come in here. Hey, Red, take out the trash. I mean, every time they talked to him, it was Red Harry, Harry Red. All right? I don't want to know what he looked like. I want you to tell me what his character was like. This man, just from the words you read here, he was a skillful hunter, a man of the open country.
Rough.
What?
Rough.
He was a rough guy. What do you think?
Kind of like a man's man.
A man's man.
Rugged.
A beast. And he would have been proud to have been called a beast, wouldn't he? Tell me about him.
Confident.
Not very smart.
Not very smart. But?
Very brave.
Very brave. Skillful hunter. Man of the open country. You get the picture, right? But, now look what the text says. I did not say this. While Jacob, what does it say?
Was
a quiet man staying among the tents. Who liked to cook. Says so. I'm not making this stuff up. And it's God who made the contrast. I am not implying anything other than just what you attach to it. Esau was a hunter. Skillful hunter, a man of the open country. I will run through a brick wall, just ask me. But all the while, Jacob was a quiet man, a man of the tents, who liked to cook.
He was a girly man.
He was, what sorts of thing we call a girly man. All right, now, tell me the tension that would have developed there. These were brothers, that says enough. But there was open country, skillful hunter, girly man. Brother, what was that like?
Oil and water.
Oil and water, very good. Asparagus and anything else. All right. I'm just trying to follow along that research. All right. Now, here's what happens. One day, Jacob's cooking, verse 29, he was cooking some stew. Now, we don't have the time to enjoy all of this like I would like to, but if you'll read in here, It's lentils. This is red beans and cornbread. The cornbread's not mentioned, but in the Hebrew, it's there. Jacob is cooking in the tent. In comes Esau. He's about the skillful hunter from the open country. And he's hungry. And so he says, look at him. Quick, let me. And I love this. Have you ever been around somebody that when they finally decide it's time to eat, they've got to eat right then, they can't wait? I got something to eat right now. And you say, well, it'll be done in about 30 minutes. I can't wait. And they just start eating everything in the cabinet. Because I can't. Somewhere I've seen that. I'm not going there. Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. All right, verse 31. Now, what does... Now, stop. Don't read it. Your brother comes in. He's hungry. And he says, I'm hungry. I'm famished. Quick, I've got to have something to eat. Give me some of that stew. Your first reaction should be, ought to be, would be...
Okay. Sure.
Sure. Have some stew. You're my brother, right? But there must have been some things going on between them for a long time. Because what does Jacob say? I will for the birthright. Now, folks, we say the word birthright, and that means nothing to us. Nothing. Nothing to us. Here's what it meant for them. If Jacob, and he did, I mean, Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau. When they divided Papa's property, now how many possessions did Jacob have? Isaac. He was a rich man. The firstborn guy, Esau, gets the birthright. That means he gets a double portion. All right? So if, you know, let's say your family has $300,000 in the bank when mama and daddy die, firstborn gets $200,000, the second one gets $100,000. Oh, Jacob was thinking. He was a planning. He was a schemer. That's why they named him cheater. I mean, Esau says, I'm hungry. I got to have stew. Sell me your birthright. Give me $200,000 and I'll give you this bowl of beans. Now, there are lessons on both sides of this deal. There are lessons on both sides of this deal. First of all, what should Jacob have said? Yeah. But he's not. He's a cheater. He's trying to scheme. I want $200,000 for a bowl of beans. And then what does Esau do? Look at it. He said, look, I'm about to die. What good is my birthright to me? So for some, hold it. Could he get him his own bowl of beans? Or could he have punched Jacob out and taken the bowl of beans? There's all kinds of lessons working here, but he gives up his birthright. He gives up two portions to the third. He gives up $200,000, let's say, for one bowl of beans. What does it tell you about Esau? I know Jacob's a cheater, but what do I know about Esau?
He doesn't think forward.
He doesn't think forward. In fact, the Bible's going to call that, in the book of Hebrews, going to call him a profane man. He thinks with his belly. He makes decisions about what he wants right now, and I ain't waiting. And you be careful if that kind of spirit is in you. You got to be real careful because it can put you in some major time hot water. Anyway, Jacob ends up with a birthright because he gets a bowl of beans to his brother Esau. Now tell me how Esau felt about Jacob now. Not only is Esau the man of the country, skillful hunter, and his brother is the sissy and the tent boy. Now he is the rich sissy and the tent boy. So how does Esau feel about him? It gets worse, all right? Go to chapter 27. Isaac gets old. It's time for him now to bless his sons. Now, we don't have time to go into this. Come to the men's study at 8. Or listen to it on tape, ladies. But that was mean, wasn't it? Bad. Bad, bad teacher. All right, Isaac was getting ready to bless his sons. All right, that had to do with who was going to be the great, 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 great grandfather of Jesus. All right, so Isaac says to Esau, now Isaac loved Esau more than he loved Jacob. Because he was a man's man, he was a father's boy. And he said, would you go get me some venison and make it that savory barbecued venison? The only way you can eat that nasty stuff anyway. But he said, go get me some barbecue venison. So what does Esau do? Run to the freezer to get some, right? No, what does he do? How easy is it to hunt deer? No, you got to make a trip for this thing, man. So he's hunting with a rifle. He's hunting with one of these bows that they've designed over years that can shoot 900 miles with one flick of your wrist? No. He's probably got him an old little bow and arrow, and or maybe it's a hatchet, and he's out looking for deer. He's a man. He's a skillful hunter. He's going to do it. So he goes off running off. Well, now, when he hears that, Isaac's wife loves, her name is Rebecca. She loves Jacob better. Bad news when the parents love kids different, right? So she says to Jacob, said, hey, listen, your dad's going to bless Isaac. Isaac's going to bless Esau, so I think what you ought to do is let's pull a double whammy on your papa and let's get the blessing for yourself. And then he goes through the whole deal. Said, I want you to go get Esau's clothes, go get me a couple of goat kids while I'm cooking the goat to make it taste like Esau's savory venison. You put enough spices in it, you can't tell if it's goat or deer or roadkill. I mean, you got plenty of spices. He says, they put the hair of the goat on the back of his hands and on the back of his neck. Tell me how hairy Esau was. If you can pass your skin as goat skin, you hairy. That is not good. I would have loved to have talked to his wife. Then go put on his clothes. Now, what would Esau's clothes, let's be honest, what would Esau's clothes smell like?
Outside.
It's outside. And would be kind of gamey. I like that phrase. Now, what would Jacob's clothes smell like? Perfume, right? He would look at now. So Jacob takes off his clothes, puts on Esau's, puts a goat skin on the back of the neck. He walks in carrying the goat, cooked like the deer, and he goes in and he said, Father, it's your son Esau, rise, kill, eat, bless me. Well, Isaac knows he doesn't sound like Esau. In fact, he's going to say it sounds like Jacob. Could I imagine they talked different too, didn't they? And so he bends down here to hug him, and he feels the back of his neck and the back of his hands, and he smells his clothes. Says, smells like, feels like Esau. Sounds like Jacob. But he eats, enjoys it, says, that's a good meal, son, and I want to bless you. He blesses Jacob. Blesses Jacob, and now Jacob is going to be what God had already told us he would be, the great, 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 great grandfather of Jesus. But in just as Jacob leaves, great movie, just as Jacob leaves, here comes Esau running in here, and he's got this platter full of venison cooked just like Daddy likes it. And he said, Daddy, rise, kill, eat, and bless me. And Jacob goes. I mean, Isaac goes. I keep saying it. Isaac goes, burp. Have I eaten? Thank you. And he said, no, you haven't eaten. Oh, didn't we name him right? We named him Cheater, and look what he's done. He cheated me out of my birthright, and he cheated me out of his blessing. Now, tell me, if you were Esau, man of the country, skillful hunter, what would you do with Sissy Tit Boy, rich Sissy Tit Boy? You're going to hunt him down. You've got some more hunting to do. And he takes off after Jacob. Jacob knows one thing, two things. He knows how to cheat, and he knows how to run. If you know how to cheat, you better learn how to run, right? So he ran. He runs off. Go to 28. He runs off. He is headed away from Esau as fast as he can go. I'm not going to draw you a map. That's not a part of this lesson. That happens at 8 o'clock. Okay. He's on his way away from running away from Esau. God gives him a dream, shows him a picture of Jesus, which is a great lesson all of its own. That's not what I'm looking for. He goes to meet Laban. Now watch Laban. He meets Laban. He sees this pretty girl. Her name is Rachel. And she has a sister whose name is Leah. Now Rachel, it says, was very beautiful. But Leah, do you read it? Can you read it? She had weak eyes. Now, put that in our terms, you could say her name was Ugh-Leah. I mean, somebody told me that meant that she was so ugly it hurt your eyes to look at her, right? That kind of deal? Right. Well, Jacob sees this pretty girl, says, hey, Laban, I want to marry her. And Laban said, that's a deal. I tell you what I'll do is if you work for me 7 years like a slave, if you work for me 7 years, I'll give you that pretty girl named Rachel. We're in chapter 29 now. I'll give you that girl, Rachel, to marry. So he worked 7 years, okay? He worked 7 years. Find the verse. 20. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Man, would this be a great love story? So now you've watched Jacob. He's cheated his brother out of his birthright. He's cheated his father and his brother out of the blessing. And now it looks like every time he turns around, something's good going for him. He escaped Esau, sees a vision of God, from God. And now he's got this beautiful wife, right? Worked 7 years for her, is ready to get married. They get married on the morning after the honeymoon night. She raises the veil to look to see on the beautiful face of Rachel. And guess what? Verse 25, when morning came, there was Leah. Now, what does Jacob do? Throws up a little bit in his mouth, and then goes tells his, oh, it's Leah. And he goes to tell Laban, Laban, what in the world are you doing? And this is Rachel, and I've done it, Rachel, and I worked 7 years, and he gave me Leah. And he said, and somewhere, somebody should have said, how's it feel now, buddy? What goes around comes around. Reap what you sow. And you think, man, he's getting his just. That's right, man. I feel sorry for Leah because she's stuck with a cheater for a husband. Well, he's whining about it. And so Laban says, okay, I'll let you marry Rachel, but you got to finish this lady's honeymoon week. And then you got to work another 7 years. Now, he lets him marry Rachel, but then he has to work another 7 years to pay for her. Well, the great story, and we'll study it sometime. At 8 o'clock, we'll study it for sure. But he has 12 sons. There's Reuben, there's Simeon, there's Levi, there's Judah, there's Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. And if you haven't noticed, if you haven't paid any attention, what you're seeing is two women competing for the affection, the respect, the love of their husband. Leah has four children, bang, 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 Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, and all of them are saying, hey, look, I had a son. excuse me, he is now joined to me. Yes, he is. Judah means praise the Lord. So Leah's just bragging up a storm. Well, Rachel goes to whining about because she can't have a baby, so she gives her handmaidens to Jacob to have babies, and she's got a whole set of names for them. It's a great study. It's a great seeing how a family fuss is that way. What I want you to notice is what's going on in Jacob's life. Is he still selfish, self-centered, cheater man? Yep. He uses men. He uses bowls of beans. He uses his mama to cheat his daddy. He uses his own brother's clothes to cheat the brother. When he saw the vision, I forgot to tell you this, I apologize. He saw the vision. He even tries to make a bargain with God. Said, God, if you'll treat me right, I'll give you a tenth of everything I get. Like God doesn't already own everything. But Jacob thinks he's trying to bargain with God. Then he gets to Laban. And he ends up getting cheated. And that bothers him. But then he ends up with the other wife that he wanted anyway. And then he starts using these women. Watch him. He is a despicable, despicable man. Anybody in here named Jacob? Good, it's interesting to me. We would never name one of our children Judas. You would never name one of our daughters Jezebel. But I've always been fascinated by somebody who named their son Jacob. Because he doesn't have a real good track record. Now, if your name's Jacob, that yours doesn't mean cheater. But his did. Anyway, Jacob will use anybody, anything to get his way. Well, there's another story in here about how he cheats his father. He cheats his father-in-law out of some sheep. Now, God blesses him in this way, but it's still Jacob scheming to get his way. The man is a self-centered, selfish schemer. He is self-centered, selfish schemer. What in the world could God do with a man like that? And our answer before we started studying this stuff, and before we really even think it through, What can God do with somebody that's that self-centered? That will use women, he'll use his parents, he'll use his brother's clothes to get what he wants. What do you think the end of that old boy is going to be? Yeah. He's in trouble. Nothing's good's going to happen in his life. Look at chapter 31, 32, and 33. Jacob starts, he leaves in the night, by the way. He runs away from Laban. Laban will catch him and says, "You stole something from me." Well, he had stolen it, and Rachel was sitting on it, hiding it. And so when the dad walked in her tent, she said, "I can't get up. It's that time of the month." And he said, "Okay, you can sit there." But she was hiding the God. This is a cheating bunch of folks, right? These are users. They are manipulate, use people to the point that I wouldn't want to be around them. And if you got them in, folks like that in your family, they're destructive to your family. Well, in chapter 32, Jacob is making his way back toward Esau. Now, you've got to be in Jacob's mindset. The closer he gets home, the closer he gets to home, the closer he gets to seeing Esau, what's he thinking?
He's going to kill me.
He's not wondering if he's still bitter. He knows he's still bitter. What does he know? What's he got to do? Think Jacob's mind. Is he going to... Say it again. I heard it. He's going to trick him. Now, would he ever think it would be to go up to him and say, "Brother, I messed up. I cheated you and I'm sorry and I want to give you back the birthright. I can't take back the blessing, but I want to give you the birthright back and I apologize and I don't blame you if you want to punch me in the arm." You know? Would he take that approach? No, not Jacob. Because what's he want to do? How can I work this to my advantage, right? I want you to watch what he does. Jacob went also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." And then he gave it a name. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my master. Your servant Jacob says, 'I have been staying with Laban and have remained there until now. I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats, men servants and maid servants. Now I am sending this message to you, my lord, that I may find favor in your eyes.'" What did he just tell him? What's he just trying to say to Esau, his brother? Instead of, "I'm sorry, I wish I hadn't done what I did," he's saying, "I'll buy you off, buddy. I got sheep and donkeys and cattle and stuff." Verse 6, when the messengers returned to Jacob, "We went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you with 400 men. Stop. You thought? Verse 7, in great fear and distress, right, reasonably so, right? In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and the herds and the camels as well. Now, why is he dividing his troops? Why is he dividing his possessions? Why is he dividing his people?
So at least some of them can escape.
Excellent. Verse 8, he said, if Esau comes and attacks one group, then the other that is left may escape. Now, I want you to watch what this guy does. He starts praying. Then Jacob prayed, "O God, my father, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, 'Go back to your country and your relatives, and I'll make you prosper. I'm unworthy.'" Oh, ding, 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 ding. "I'm unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I only had my staff when I crossed this Jordan. Now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, 'I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted.'" Stop. What's the first honest, real, good thing he ever did? He confesses to God what? That he is unworthy. He doesn't try to bargain anymore. He doesn't say, "God, if you'll save me from Esau, God, then man, I'll give you 20%. No. He makes no bargains. It's a real simple lesson. We'll come back to it, but log it away somewhere. Sometimes when we're begging God for something, do we ever bargain with him? "God, if you'll get me out of this, I promise I'll never do it again." Guess what? you're lying, and he knows it. God, if you'll get me out of this, man, I will become a missionary to deep, dark Africa. I will put a bone in my nose, and I'll live in Ulagula forever. And what does he know? You're lying. God, if you get me out of this, I promise, man, I will never get married, and I will shave my head, and I will chant at airports and collect change. He knows you're lying. You can make whatever bargain you want to make with him. It's not going to help. So what do? Honest up. Come clean. Just tell him, God, I messed up. I'm not worthy. I am pitiful. Say it. Now watch what happens. He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, and 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. He put them in care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, you go ahead of me and keep your space between the herds. What's he doing? He's hedging his bet, right? He's got to fight through. He's got to collect all those animals. Esau, if he wants them, he's going to have to take them. He's going to give Jacob more time to get away. Keep going. Verse 17, he instructed the one in the lead, when my brother Esau meets you, said, to whom do you belong? And where are you going? And who owns all these animals in front of you? Then you say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau, and he is coming behind us. He also instructed the second and the third group and all the others who followed the herds. You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind them. For he thought, read the phrase, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later when I see him, perhaps he'll receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in camp. Now watch this next verse. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, two maidservants, 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all of his possessions. So Jacob was left... Stop. Where is Jacob? Where's Jacob? Let's say this is the ford of the Jabbok, okay? He sent all of his stuff this way, right? All those sheep, goats, and camels. Now what's he done with his family? He sent them across too. And where is he? See anything funny about that? What's still in his heart of hearts? He is still self-centered to the point that he can't reason. Well, look what happens. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, the two maidservants, and 11 sons across the ford. After he had sent them across, he sent over his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. Now, it's interesting that it just says it that simply. But if you put it, if you were there, you were by yourself. You're sleeping in the tent by yourself. You're on your sleeping bag by yourself. Everybody else is across the river. You are as safe as can be. And a guy jumps on you. Wrestle means what? Yeah, this is not jump off the top turnbuckle and act like you're hitting somebody. He's wrestling with him. What does that mean? This is a fight. Now, if you're asleep and somebody jumps on you and starts to fight, if you were Jacob, what would you think? It's got to be Esau, right? So would you be fighting like, oh, this is not a big deal. When the sun comes up in the morning, we'll be friends. Now, what are you thinking? I'm going to die. He is fighting for his life. When the man saw that he could not overpower Jacob, he touched the socket of Jacob. He touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched. What does wrench mean? Pulled out a joint. I mean, he touches him on the socket of the hip and blows the joint, right? As he wrestled with the man, that happened as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said to him, let me go, for it's daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. I don't know at this point if he knows it's Esau or not, but he's demanding. He knows now, I'm going to be able to survive this. I want a blessing. The man said, well, what's your name? Interesting question. Log it away somewhere in your memory. When God asks you a question, who is it that needs to know the answer? You need to know it. Adam and Eve heard God ask, Adam, where are you? Who needed to know? Adam needed to know. Jesus will say it to his disciples, who do you say that the Son of Man is? Who needs to know? The disciples need to know. Jacob needs to say his own name. Because when he says his name, what is he saying? What is your name? My name is deceiver, cheater, schemer, supplanter. Then the man said to him, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel. I want you to watch something. Look down at the bottom of your Bible if you need to. See if you can tell me what Israel means. Somebody who wrestled with God. Now, finish the phrase, though, in the next phrase in the verse. You have wrestled with God and with men and have overcome. The name Israel comes to mean someone who wrestles with God, has influence with God, and eventually will be defined as Prince of God. Because he was smarter? Nope. Because he was trickier? Because he was faster? Nope. He says, your name will be Israel because you've struggled with God and with men and have overcome. You're going to become Prince of God. He said, tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, which is, I saw the face of God, yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. And then it tells you why they don't eat that piece of meat forever. It's interesting. This boy, it was such a schemer, who will allow himself to be called Esau to get a blessing, has to admit to God that he is a cheater. I am self-centered, cheater, schemer. I have survived in my life by knowing how to lie better than anybody else and how to run faster than anybody else. But when he comes back home, faced with fear of facing Esau, he confesses to God, I am worth nothing of what you've done for me. My name is Cheater. And now, because that angel, that man, touched his hip, what do I know? What does he know? He can't outrun anybody anymore. So where does his power have to be? If you lie, remember what we said? If you lie, you better be able to run. If you lie like he did, you better be able to run fast like he did. So if you can no longer run, if you can no longer escape, what had you better do? Trust somebody else. And in this case, Jacob decides to trust God. So what does he say about himself? What does he say about himself? Go back to his prayer. Go back to his statement to the angel. What does he say about himself? He tells the truth. He tells the truth. I'm not worthy of any of the things that you've done for me. Not one of them. My name is Cheater. He tells the truth. You want to start rebuilding you've lived a selfish life? I don't know. You know better than anybody else knows. You know if you've lied to people. You know if you've schemed things. You know if you've tricked your parents, manipulated them. You know if you've manipulated boyfriends or girlfriends. You know if you've lied. You know if you've cheated. You know all those things. So where do you start if you want to walk with God? Tell the truth. tell the truth to God. And then what do? Say, here you go.
I knew it'd come out. You tell the truth and then you trust him. If you're going to lie, you better be able to run. But if you can't run, you better
tell somebody. You better tell the truth. You better find somebody you can trust besides your mouth and your feet. And so the rest of Jacob's life, every time he took a step and he limped, every time he took a step, what did he remember? Better not lie. Better not lie. Better not lie. Why? Because I can't run anymore. So I have to learn to trust God. Where does it start? Telling the truth. Quit making bargains with God's a point. Quit making bargains with God. You need something? Lay it out flat out in front of him and beg his mercy. You have nothing to offer him. Did God need Jacob? God could. Remember it's the old joke that Bill Cosby used to tell all the time about his kids? Tell his kids, said, listen, I'll get rid of you because I can make another one look just like you. Boy, God could do that just like that, couldn't he? So why did he choose to use Jacob? I'll let you work it out. I'm convinced he used these men, and I got some words from God on it to tell me, but he wanted us to learn something. We learn from these men. In spite of their weaknesses, will God still use them? In spite of their weaknesses, will God still use them? In spite of their selfishness, self-centered, manipulative ways, will God still use them? Yeah. So if I've been selfish, if I've been manipulative, if I've been a liar, if I've been a schemer, if I've been somebody that spent my whole life thinking about me instead of anybody else, if I decide that I want to walk with God, what do I do? Tell the truth and trust Him. Now, sometimes you learn that lesson the hard way. Some of us in this room learned it the hard way. And for the rest of your life, you may limp. For the rest of your life, you may carry around some mark, some scar. For the rest of your life, you may carry around some reputation. It's all right. You may not be able to run as fast. You may not be able to look as good. But God changed your name, didn't He? It's no longer cheater. It's no longer schemer. It's no longer manipulator, liar. It's Israel. Somebody who belongs to God and has influence with God. And so He takes this man named Jacob and his 12 sons. And one of those sons, Judah, has a son who has a son who has a son who has a son whose name happens to be Boaz, Ruth 4 says. And Boaz spots a beautiful Moabite widow picking up grain, looking through the dumpsters, as it were, for food for her and her bitter mother-in-law. Marries her, and they have a baby, and they rejoice because they've had a baby named Obed. And Obed, Jacob's Israel's great-great-great-great-great-grandson, has a baby named Jesse, and Jesse has a son named David. And David just happened to kill a giant and became king over all Israel and was told by God, it'll be one of your babies. It'll be your baby that sits on the throne of God forever. So how much did God use Jacob? Oh, lots of ways. But the only one that really matters to us, the old liar, the old schemer, the old manipulator, spends the rest of his life walking with a limp. but he brought to the world, helped God bring to the world Jesus. If I have to limp the rest of my life, will I matter? Will it bother me at all if God is able to work through me to bring Jesus to the world? So, you messed up. You've been selfish. Acknowledge it. Let God forgive you. Let Him change your name. You're not a liar. You're saved. You're not a manipulator. You're forgiven. You're not a schemer. You're a disciple. He will change your name and change your purpose and fulfill His will in you, even if you walk with a limp. Right? Let's pray. Father, thank You for tonight, for these folks and their attention. Thank You for the food and the people that provided.